H.G. Wells pretty much invented the time machine in 1895.
You must be mad. A time machine.
Yes, my friend, a time machine.
This thing?
This very thing.
This contraption? This framework made of quartz and bronze, ivory?
Yes! This was exactly 10 years before Einstein came up with his theory of special relativity.
Time is only a kind of space. If we can move about in all the other dimensions of space, why not in time, too?
Fiction, in this case, beat science to it. My next guest joining us is Connie Willis. Connie has written novels and short stories about time travel for the last 25 years, including her Hugo and Nebula Award-winning novel, Doomsday. Connie Willis, welcome.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you.
I realized, well, as soon as we announced that you were going to be on this show, the science fiction blogosphere lit up. You're a big deal in this
world. Oh, that's cool. That's nice to know.
Thank you for coming. The heroes in your novels tend to be academics traveling backward in
time.
That's right.
And they travel back before the time machine was invented, I might add.
Yes. Well, you guys can duke that out in a little bit. But what started you? What got you interested in time travel in the beginning?
Well, I think probably the beginning was that I'm a hopeless neurotic, and so I second guess everything I have ever said or done, and will tonight, this entire show. So it was a normal thing for me to do, to consider the possibility of going into the past and remaking it and redoing it and trying again. But I was lucky enough when I started reading science fiction to immediately read some true classics like Vintage Season by C.L. Moore and Henry Kuttner, and The Door into Summer by Robert Heinlein. And if that isn't enough to hook you on time travel forever, I don't know what is.
Heinlein wrote a few sort of seminal time travel stories.
He did, and he wrote some of the the grandfather paradox stories where you end up going back in time and marrying your own self and giving birth to your own self and so on. And they're great stories. They're really fun. Eliminates the middleman, sort of.
Now, you use in your novels, you use time travel only to go into the past in the similar way that early science fiction used time travel to go into the future before they just simply set stories in the future.
Right. I think after a very few time travel stories where they did go into the future, they realized that they no longer needed the excuse of a time machine, that you simply set the story in the future.
Well,
and people
so why
accept
don't
that,
you so. Then just write historical novels?
Because I think the time travel novel is a different sort of thing. I love the history part. I do love that. But I also like the idea that you have someone in the past who, instead of just living through it, actually has a perspective on it. We have absolutely no knowledge about the time that we're living through because we don't know what's going to happen next and how it's all going to turn out. But we have really good perspective about what's already happened.
And do you find, as a person of the age you are now, that you write about...
Old. He means old.
That kind of experience of somebody knowing what's going to happen in a way differently than you did when you were 30?
Yeah. One thing that I really notice is that during these past dark years that we've been living through in the United States, the past 8 years specifically...
I can't imagine what you mean.
I have noticed that I'm much like calmer and more, it will all work out. Everything will be fine because I have had the advantage of living through dark times before. So I think that does make a difference. The only problem with that is that you can get sort of a nasty, well, it'll all work out, so why do anything to fix it attitude.
You have, I understand, just finished not only a novel, but a novel that's so epic.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be published in two volumes.
Yeah, like The Blob. It sort of just grew and grew, and now it's two books, but really one. It's really one book.
Uh-huh.
And so I hasten to say this because at the end of the first volume, I leave my characters in such dire, dire straits. They're not literally hanging from a cliff, but close.
Can you maybe read a bit from the first one?
I would love to.
It's called Blackout?
That's right. It's called Blackout. The second one's called All Clear. And this is about time-traveling historians who go to the World War II, to the civilian parts of World War II. This is from a random first chapter. When Michael got back to his rooms, Charles was there. "What are you doing here, Davies?" he asked. "I thought you were leaving this afternoon." "No," Michael said disgustedly. He draped his dress whites over a chair. "My drop's been postponed till Friday, which they could have told me before I went and got my American accent, so I wouldn't have to run around Oxford sounding like a damned fool for 2 days." "You always sound like a damned fool, Davies," Charles said, grinning. "Why was your drop postponed?" "I don't know. The lab's running behind." Charles nodded. "Lina says they're simply swamped over there, 10 drops and retrievals a day. If you ask me, there are entirely too many historians going to the past. We'll be crashing into each other soon. I hope they postpone my drop. I've still got masses of things to learn. You wouldn't know anything about fox hunting, would you?" "Fox hunting? I thought you were going to Singapore." "I am, but a lot of the British officers there were apparently county and spent all their time discussing their fox hunting exploits." He picked up the dress whites Michael'd slung over the chair. "This is a naval uniform. What was the U.S. Navy doing at the Battle of the Bulge?" "Not the Battle of the Bulge. Pearl Harbor," Michael said. "Then the Second World Trade Center bombing. Then the Battle of the Bulge." "I thought you were going to the evacuation of Dunkirk." "I am. That's fourth on the list, after which I do Salisbury and El Alamein." "Tell me again why you're going to all these dangerous places." "Because that's where heroes are, and that's what I'm observing." "But do you actually have to be on the boat at Pearl Harbor with Lord Nelson or whoever it was? Couldn't you observe him from a safe distance?" "No," Michael said. "One, observing from a safe distance is what historians were stuck doing before Ira Feldman invented time travel. Two, Lord Nelson was at Trafalgar, not Pearl Harbor. And three, I'm not studying the Lord Nelsons. I'm studying ordinary people who you wouldn't expect to be heroic, but who, when there's a crisis, show extraordinary bravery and self-sacrifice." "And you're certain being fired at by Japanese Zeros isn't a 10? I still can't see how you persuaded Dunworthy to approve a project like that." "You're going to Singapore?" "Yes, but I'm coming back before the Japanese arrive," Charles said. "Oh, that reminds me. Someone phoned for you earlier." "Who was it?" "I don't know. Shakira took the message. She was here teaching me to foxtrot."
That was Connie Willis reading from the first volume of her forthcoming novel entitled Blackout, which is coming out in February.
In February. Mm-hmm.
Ira Feldman invented time travel.
Yes, he did. Huh. Yes. You didn't know that, did you?
No, but muzzle talk, Mr. Feldman.